Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spirit Therapy Radio. My name is Nicole Tomasini, and we're going to jump right into it talking about sleeping well. And tonight we have a special guest, Mark Johnson, who is the clinical director at the Drexel Sleep Center in Philadelphia. So thank you for coming and joining us, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. I'm so excited about this topic because I've heard so many people asking questions about it and actually lived with a father that battled with insomnia his whole life. So, and my sister too. But, and then being a pretty good sleeper myself, it's very interesting all the different ways that, that sleep can happen. So I thought we'd start out with telling us about how did you get into sleep therapy as a vocation?
Well, it's an interesting story. So I am a graduate of university. I have a bachelor's of arts in psychology. But during my undergrad time at Temple, I was doing research in sleep at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital. And from there, after I graduated, I actually got more into sleep doing research, and then I got into doing clinical work. And I've been doing this for about 22 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, so, long time.
So you enjoy it, clearly.
I love sleep. I love to sleep. So it's a wonderful thing. It really runs the gamut where we look at, we see things in the lab setting, everything from, again, from insomnia, as you noted, to obstructive sleep apnea, which is when a patient stops breathing for periods of time while they're sleeping. They're not always aware of it, but the symptoms are usually manifest themselves during the day. So they're excessively sleepy. Even after that morning cup of coffee, they're still sleepy. They have trouble concentrating. They're irritable, things like that. But we also see also narcolepsy patients who are actually unable to stay awake. They have an unusual need to sleep, which is
a bizarre one, isn't it?
It's very bizarre. It's all chemical. It's not something that happens because you're just not sleeping very well. It's unfortunate that you're almost born that way. It's a heredity. There's heredity behind it, it's really traced from generation to generation sometimes. Wow. It is fixable. Usually medication for people who have narcolepsy works really well. So, and then we see a whole host of other disorders, limb movement disorders, REM behavior disorder. I can go on and on and on. But every little bit of it, I really enjoy every aspect of it. Everybody is different, so everybody has a different story. But it's a fantastic field. I think everybody is interested in it because people like to sleep and they want to know about their sleep and why they don't sleep or why they sleep too much. So it's quite fascinating.
Yeah, apparently we spend an average of 24 years asleep.
Very true. In your lifetime you spend about 24 years asleep. But for some people, it's a little bit less. For some, it's a little bit more. But that's about the average. And it seems like it's a waste of time, but I could have been doing something else. I could have been going on a trip or windsailing, or surfing. But sleep is vital to your health. And so it's not time wasted. It's your body needs it. So it's a good thing. It's a very good thing.
Do you guys deal anything with dreams in the sleep?
We do a little bit of it. We have a psychologist who's actually on board with us who we don't really analyze dreams, but we do look into people who have nightmares. Sometimes it's related to post-traumatic stress or other some people, and we're talking about adults. We don't really see children in my clinical area, children have nightmares is actually, unfortunately, pretty normal. Children actually have a tendency to grow out of it. When it gets into adulthood and it interferes with your daily life, then there's usually some type of trauma that actually happened to them, again, either post-traumatic stress disorder or some other stressors in their life that, the nightmares manifest themselves. And it's very disruptive and scary for patients. So.
Have you had any war veterans come to the center?
We've had a few. And for those who do have post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, we usually, there is medication for to help them sort of not have the nightmares. So basically, usually in nightmares, you're in rapid eye movement. There's medication that is administered to prevent them from going into rapid eye movement, even though it's a very important part of your sleep cycle. But for those patients, we suppress the REM for them so that we can prevent them from having nightmares. But clearly, you know, for those folks, medication isn't always the first way to go. It's usually psychotherapy is probably the best way to do it. If psychotherapy isn't really working very well, we do it in conjunction with medication. So it's not one or the other. It's sometimes it's both. But we usually start with the psychotherapy first.
Wow, that's great, because really, that's clearly like a thorn in the lion's paw, right? That you have
Absolutely.
To deal with the thorn. You can't go
Absolutely,
around it.
Right. I can't bandage it up. I got to get the thorn out. And
yeah.
I think the best way to do it, as you probably already know, is psychotherapy
wow.
and even group therapy if it's necessary. But I think one-on-one therapy helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Wow. That is so interesting. So what are some of the most common ones? Obviously, the sleep apnea. Go on.
So, yeah, I would say in our clinical practice, I would say 85 to 90% of our patients have sleep apnea. So,
wow,
so basically what it is.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. So there are an estimated it's going to seem like a crazy number, but 20 million people go undiagnosed every year. So, again, as I said earlier, the symptoms are excessive daytime sleepiness, snoring. When a bed partner is with the other person, they note that the person stops breathing while they're sleeping. So there's usually a pause in their breathing and then a gasp and a cough. To come out of it and then they go back to sleep again, back to snoring. Now, a caveat is not everybody who snores has sleep apnea, but everybody who has sleep apnea snores. So it's always nice to do a quick screen on those patients who do snore to find out if they do have obstructive sleep apnea. Witness that. And also, again, irritability, unable to concentrate, things like that. The sleepiness during the day is a telltale sign. We have had patients who fall asleep while they're driving to work or coming home from work, or they fall asleep at red lights at all times during the day. So that's when it's time to come in to evaluate to see if they actually do have obstructive sleep apnea. Because what happens is...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
So what happens is in apnea, you're sleeping, you're snoring, your airway cuts off. So basically, your airway, the uvula falls back on the soft palate to close off the airway. And then at that point, your chest and stomach are moving, but there's no air getting through. Your body then, your brain realizes it's not breathing, and so it's like it's trying to wake up, and you cough and gasp to get the airway reopened again, and then you just go back to sleep and it goes into this pattern. And people aren't aware that they wake up because there's sort of micro arousals, that's what they're called. So you're only waking up for 10, 15 seconds at a time. But in a 8-hour period, it adds up. So you're really, instead of really getting 8 hours of sleep, you're really getting 4 to 5 hours of sleep.
Wow.
So
what is that about? I mean, 80 to 90%, that's a huge number. Because with spirit therapy, we always like to look at the other side and, you know, the cause and effect of everything. So why do you think that's happening so much to people?
So for apnea specifically, weight is a factor. So, you know, we're a country where there are a lot of obese people, which is unfortunate. So weight is usually the first indicator that we look at. For men, if they have a neck size larger than 17 and a half inches. And usually sleep apnea is more prominent in middle-aged, overweight men more than women, although women are beginning to catch up a little bit in the statistics a little bit. But so weight is a factor. So if you are anywhere from as little as 10 pounds overweight to 100 pounds overweight, you could be a candidate for or could be as an indicator for having obstructive sleep apnea. So in a sense, and for some, it's not a weight issue. Sometimes it's just a makeup of the structure of their throat, or people have tonsils or their adenoids in, or a deviated septum. So those are also indicators that the airway is blocked or occluded. So the cure for it, for the really obese patients, the one thing that is 100% cure rate for sleep apnea is weight loss. And when I say weight loss, the other indicator for that also is getting bariatric gastric bypass surgery, basically, so the bariatric surgery, because all the weight comes off and the airway is not as crowded. The neck size comes down and you're actually able to breathe at night. But for others, we've had patients who are, you know, 300 pounds plus. They go on a, you know, they start exercising, taking better care of themselves, eating better, eating regularly, exercising. There's one patient I knew some years ago who was over 300 pounds, and now he's running marathons. And so he's doing great. He's not on CPAP at all. He's doing fantastic.
Wow, interesting that weight is the most common about it. And to think about metaphysical reasons, the idea of not breathing while you're sleeping, I mean, of course, you have the body thing happening, but while you're talking, I'm just working it out in my head, you know, a not breathing during sleeping. So like almost a wanting to get to the other side for a second or something.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I would absolutely 100% agree with that. Mm-hmm. You know, there are books talking about sleep. You know, sleep. There's a little saying that sleep is like a mini death because you're in a funny state. You know, sleep, we still don't really know why we sleep. You know, people say, oh, I know why we sleep. Well, we're tired. But really, honestly, why is it at some point does the brain need to shut down and actually go into a mini hibernation? That's really what we go through. And when you get into the point where you're having apnea, you know, so you have an actual urge to sleep, but then you're fighting to breathe, it kicks it up to another level, I think, at that point.
Yeah, it's like you're forgetting about the body and there's maybe like a disconnect between where the spirit wants to go and the connection with the body doing what it needs to do while it's here. And that jerkiness also, it's just something about that, you know, jerking, going, because I've seen people that have sleep apnea And when they go to sleep, they crash. I mean, when they're out, everybody knows it. Of course, you can hear it, you know. But you can see their whole body is just like a ton of weight. And so that kind of really rough driving in a way.
It's quite the show. I mean, it's people have no idea what they look like when they're sleeping, and you know, we observe them. People are always wary that we're watching them sleep. We are, but we're not. I mean, we're looking at all the parameters on the computer because we have to put electrodes on their head and respiratory bands across their chest and stomach to monitor your breathing, and we're watching everything on the monitors. But no, there are
them?
People who.
Oh no! You never show them what they look like when they're sleeping.
No. I mean, we've had requests, but there's initial curiosity of what they look like. But I assure you, it's very boring. It's really watching paint dry sometimes. I mean, it can be if you really want to fall asleep, just watch somebody else sleep, and it's just one time. So you're jealous of them, and then two, it can be quite boring for your average patient who's here to sleep. But again, there are other disorders that make it a little more lively, of course, but the jerking, like you said, it's especially for the bed partner. Like for us, again, I've been doing it for a while, I'm used to it, I can see it, but for a bed partner or someone who's new to sleeping with their bed partner and they witness these things, it's quite frightening. And then the bed partner can't sleep because they want to make sure that the person starts to breathe again. And again, the jerking and the moving around is disruptive from the bed partner as well. And then you get into, I can't sleep in the same room with this person. And then some people actually get to the point of like, I can't even live with this person. So it can really disrupt a home and on so many levels. So we're I think sleep centers and mine in particular, you know, we're here to help them and not have them fight with the crossing over to the other side. We want to keep them here, and we want to keep them healthy and happy. And honestly, I'll tell a quick story, and then I'm sure you're going to have other questions for me, but years ago I had a patient, really difficult, just wasn't compliant with the whole thing. And then, you know, he came back, and so we can correct sleep apnea with an artificial device called a CPAP, which is CPAP, which is continuous positive airway pressure. In essence, it's positive air going through the nasal passage and down the throat, again, creating an artificial splint to keep the airway open, allows you to breathe, it gets rid of snoring, and gives you a better night's sleep. So the guy came back, I put the CPAP on him, he's like, oh, I guess it's okay. I said, well, you know, good luck to you. And I don't know, maybe 6 months later, I'm coming out of movies, and he sees me, and he looks at me, and he stops, and he looks at me again. Of course, you see me out of context, you know, you have no idea who I am. And he said, you're from the sleep center, aren't you? I'm, yes, I am. And he said, honey, come over here. And he called his wife, this guy saved my life. Oh, my gosh, this thing is a godsend. I can't thank you enough. I feel so much better. So it's amazing what you can do. I think in this particular field, you can go from feeling lousy to feeling great in a matter of hours. It's quite gratifying to see that, actually.
People don't realize like how we can get so used to being fatigued that we think it's normal.
It's a new normal for people. And when you don't feel that normal, you feel a new normal, it can be a little... you're not sure how to react anymore. It's like, well, now I feel energized, different. I can't believe I was okay with feeling so tired and fatigued and grouchy all those years, you know. And then they start to beat themselves up. Well, why didn't I do this sooner? Oh, better late than never. So
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was thinking about the other people that are not as far as sleep apnea, but people that can't stay asleep for long periods of time, either 2 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours. If they can get 6 hours, usually, you know, they feel like they hit the jackpot. So what's the deal with being able to fall asleep but not be able to stay asleep? Like, what's happening there?
Right. What's the deal with that? That's a very Seinfeld thing. So,
it's the New Yorker in me. I can't help it.
It is, right? It is, right?
What's going on, people? I mean, really.
So it's on a couple levels, and I'll keep it simple. I'm sure some folks might be typing or might want to call and ask questions, but I think the one thing we always ask patients who have trouble staying asleep, we always ask them, you know, what is your caffeine intake during the day? You know, people light their coffee or tea, but talking to the coffee drinkers out there, or even cigarette smokers, what is your caffeine intake during the day? Do you drink one cup a day? Do you drink more than one cup a day? Do you drink a cup of coffee after 4 o'clock in the afternoon? Caffeine can stay in the body and the system for 24 hours, which a lot of people don't really realize, and I didn't realize that either before I started getting into this, but it can stay in your system for 24 hours, which can affect your sleeping pattern. Caffeine is a stimulant, so it can keep you awake. I think we always tell our patients, the patients who have trouble sleeping, you have to treat caffeine like a drug, because in a sense it's kind of like a little drug. So you have to treat it as such and do portion control and be careful when you do it. So if you have your cup of coffee in the morning, you're probably fine. But if you're having more than one cup of coffee a day, it can affect your sleep at night. It can disrupt it. Same thing with alcohol. What's your alcohol intake? You know, a beer on a Friday night probably isn't a big deal. If you're going to have a cocktail every night at 7, 8 o'clock at night, it's a short-acting drug, so it can put you to sleep. But the alcohol wears off. The sugar leaves your body, and then you're awake, so it wakes you up. Now, for those who don't do a lot of caffeine and don't have a lot of alcohol intake or whatever, we also tell patients, you know, you need to sort of de-stress before you go to sleep. So you have to start winding down. So if your bedtime, Nicole, what time do you go to bed?
Around 12:30.
Okay. And you have no trouble sleeping. I'm not putting you on the spot. I'm just asking. So.
Yeah, no, I'm a very good sleeper.
Good to hear. I will never see you here then. That's fine.
Sorry, Mark.
It's okay. No, it's fine. But for people who we have to pick a bedtime. So let's just say it's 11 o'clock p.m. So leading up to 11 o'clock, probably usually tell people around 10:30 or so, start to wind down. So that means turning off the TV, turning off your phones, turning off the computer, getting yourself into a relaxed state of mind, basically, to get ready for bed. We also encourage patients not to use the bed for anything else other than sleep and what you might do with your bed partner. But meaning don't eat in bed, try not to watch TV in bed, try not to read in bed. Again, these are for people who have a lot of trouble sleeping. Some people, well, I like to read before I go to sleep, you know, to doze off. That's fine.
So it's like Pavlov's dog that associates the bed with the sleep, and then the bell goes off and you're sleeping, and nothing else, right?
Exactly, and nothing else, right, and nothing else. And you hit the nail on the head. You're conditioning your body just like Pavlov's dog. So when the bell rings, aka you hit the bed, it's sleeping time. You know, it's not I'm awake, I'm not going to watch TV time. Also, again, using computers or iPads, the light from those devices, actually, so light is a stimulant. It actually wakes you up, which is why in the morning we always encourage patients to get up out of bed, open the drapes, and let the sunshine in, not to sing the song, but you want the light receptors to hit your eyes to say, okay, it's daytime, it's time to go. And so at night, you want to turn down those receptors. You want to encourage sleep. So you need to turn off those devices, turn the lights down, make it a cool, comfortable environment for you. Now, you don't want the room to be freezing cold, but you don't want it too warm. You need sort of a Goldilocks kind of a thing. You need the room just right. So you're basically training your body to get ready for sleep, basically. So I think a lot of people who go to sleep and then wake up, again, it's what are you doing before you go to bed? Did you have, again, that one last sip of cup of coffee? Did you, you know, have your iPad on or listen to music or watch TV, you know, right before you went to sleep? You need to, and then you want almost a dark environment in your room, too. You want to try to keep the absence of light coming in. So you don't want any light coming in. If that means darkening shades, you know, you're in the city, you can't help but having, you know, streetlights streaming through your window sometimes. So you need to try to block all that light out or whatever.
It sounds like to adjust to have that work, you mean? Oh, it takes time to be able to go through these rituals, you mean, and shut yourself down.
Correct. It's not tonight I'll try it and that's it. No, I would say to get into a new pattern of trying to get more sleep, I would say it takes about, you know, 8 to 10 to 12 days to really get into a really good rhythm of sleep. Mm-hmm. So, but it's 8 to 10, 12, you know, days of getting to rhythm for a lifetime of good sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it's long-term, yeah.
It sounds like it's the people that aren't staying asleep, it's like their reactors are still on. Like the people that hear any noise, and they're like, huh, what? Go, you know, grabbing for guns and what's happening, you know? It's like the reactor is just right under the surface and might pop up
exactly.
at any time,
exactly.
right?
Exactly,
so,
absolutely.
So you have to train yourself to calm the receptor, right?
Exactly. Of course, it's difficult for new parents to turn that off because they want to hear the crying baby.
Mm.
Again, that's a whole nother area.
Sleep pattern, right?
Right. That's a whole. You know, those are there parameters in there that are completely unpredictable, and you just have to. Those are the kinds of things you have to. Work out for a good year and a half until they're able. Well, not even that long. Some babies can go to sleep within a year or 6 months, but it's a rough time for new parents. But for those who either have grown children or don't have children or are in a position where you can start to shut things down and get into a pattern of sleeping time, it can work really well. But again, if you are, like some people say, well, I can't turn my brain off. You know, how do I stop thinking? You know, I'm constantly thinking about this and the other. I think where, you know, you start getting into the idea of maybe doing some light meditation, you know, even not maybe right before you go to bed, but even like during the day, you know, at some point during the day, just stop, meditate for 5 minutes at a time. And then when it's time for bed, again, you're avoiding the caffeine, you're avoiding the alcohol, you're avoiding any other kind of stimulants. You're turning off the electronics, you're shutting off the lights, you know, dim lights, candlelight, those things are very good. And again, using the bedroom, making it cool but comfortable, using the bed only for sleep. You get into that pattern, you'll start to see the difference. And it'll happen incrementally. So the first night, I woke up after 2 hours, and then you know, in a few more days, I woke up after 3 hours. Your duration will get longer and longer and longer, and before you know it, you're waking up with an alarm clock, and it's 6:30 in the morning, you're ready to go.
Wow. I was hoping that you would bring up meditation, because it also helped me to go deeper into sleep, mm-hmm. and sounds like I'm astral projecting. I'd like to ask you about that in a little bit, but that meditation is, to me, it's like it shows you the world of sleep without actually sleeping. And then even though sometimes you can fall asleep, so it's that very fine line. So it does teach you where sleep is if you wanted to go, like the journey towards it. And again, with giving your brain that relaxation time to go, okay, say, because I like meditations where you just say, okay, brain, tell me everything that you've been saying for the last 48 hours over and over again.
Right.
Now, go ahead. I'm listening.
Right.
Go. And then you can put some rest to some of those ideas so that your brain will stop asking so much.
Absolutely. I think anything you can do to promote better sleep for you, you know, it's very beneficial. And I agree with you. I think the whole idea of, you're, again, as you said you're meditating and getting all those things out, you know, getting, even if you're meditating through it, writing it down, some form of cathartic exercise to get all those things out before you go to sleep. It is, again, going to be more beneficial to you now, and then when you actually go to bed, everything is all out and done, and you can just relax and get a really good night's sleep.
And drift, yeah.
And well, just drift off, right?
Yeah. Well, we're at the half-hour mark perfectly, so I'm going to play a little bit of this song called Silence by Sarah McLachlan, because I feel it really embodies the feeling of sleep, and it's difficult to hear what she's saying, so I just want to read a couple of the lyrics, because to me it's poetry about sleep. So it's, give me release, witness me, I am outside, give me peace. Heaven holds a sense of wonder, and I wanted to believe it. I get caught up when the rage in me subsides. Isn't that awesome poetry about dreaming and sleeping?
Yeah, I love it.
So let's hear her sing it. Go. Snippet of that song. Isn't it awesome?
That
I love
was terrific.
You can play it for your patients.
Oh my gosh, I was actually trying to fall asleep.
And I just love her voice. She's just got this like angelic resonance to her voice.
It's a very melodic. I mean, I've been a big fan of Sarah McLachlan. Not to give her a plug here, but no, she's just terrific. I know she's going back on tour again. Not to keep plugging her, but no, I think it's funny, you know, kind of morphing back into, you know, melodic music, we don't pipe it in, but we do encourage patients, if they want to bring their own music with them, like a sound machine or some kind of, again, meditative music, that's always a good thing, too. So
nice. I was going to ask about that. Yeah, go on. Finish your thought.
No, so it's just, it's for some people who, again, for the patients who have so much trouble falling asleep or whatever, we will do sort of, you know, our typical patient, you know, they're fine. They can just knock themselves out and go to sleep. But for the patients who have difficulty, and again, those insomniacs or patients who sleep for 2 hours and wake up and then so on and so forth, that, yeah, we encourage them to bring their own music or something meditative or something quiet. Again, sort of ease their way into sleep time.
How do you feel about the theta waves and those sort of subliminal or the white noise sounds for people to work with?
I think it's it's whatever works for you. But I like the idea of having a white noise or sort of the theta waves that kind of, again, as you said, sort of said earlier, sort of you're drifting into sleep at that point. It's a transition, you know, the white noise, the mantras, the all that sort of becomes, it gets into your subconscious, and then you just slip right off to sleep. And it does work.
And it is about being able to release at the end of the day, to let go, right? You don't have to hold the reins. The horse will still be there in the morning.
it's teaching people to let go. Right. And I think that is the biggest hurdle I think anybody has to try to get over, you know. But I think people just need the tools to know how to let go. And I think your program and the other programs like yours, you know, help people. You know, some people, well, I'd love to let go, but I just don't know how. And so, you know, I think that's where you come in and where we try to come in as well. It's okay to let go. It's okay to relax. It's okay to, you know, again, those things will be there. Sleep should be a place of comfort and a respite place, a place to rejuvenate. And that's really what sleep does to you. You are reborn every time you wake up.
Yeah.
When you're sleeping, everything is your respiratory rate slows down, your heart slows down, and it's your body's way of rejuvenating itself. So that's why sleep, to me, makes the world go round. You know, if you're not sleeping well, your circulatory system is out of whack. You know, your respiratory system's out of whack. Your brain is still awake. With every time you wake up, whatever, your brain needs to relax and rebuild and rejuvenate. So.
And go into the spirit world. I mean,
exactly.
That's such a other side. I mean, maybe we can entice people to release and relax if we tell them how great it is on the other side. So can you tell us a little bit about astral projecting?
Yeah. I know a little bit about it. We in our practice, we haven't really gotten into it with a lot of our patients. But for us, I know we haven't really gone into the astral part of it, but what we've in our sense of the crossing over into the sleep world or whatever, it then leads into the dream world. And some patients are able to get into their dreams and almost have these lucid dreams and can control things while they're sleeping. I mean, while they're in their dream, they are aware of what's going on. They can control the situation. And it's an interesting gift to have when you can do that. Some people can harness it and run with it. And I think for those patients, again, we had a patient the other day who, again, nightmares for years, but she was able to be in her dream and understand that this doesn't have to happen. I can stop this person from chasing me. It's those typical someone's chasing me dreams or someone's trying to hurt me dreams, whatever. There's a way to get into it and control the dream while you're in it. You can jump in and out of it very easily sometimes, You can pick up where you left off. If you wake up and go back to sleep and get right back into the same dream again. Now, it takes a lot of practice and time, but it is doable. So in a sense, that's where we have kind of gone up to that point but haven't gone beyond that.
Interesting. Yeah, the lucid dreaming, I studied that in college, and they said the best way to train yourself with lucid dreaming is to give yourself the thought before you go to sleep that you're going to look at your hands or look at your feet, and then you know that you're there and blah, blah, blah. And I tried it for a little while, and I just about got to see my hands, but I was like, eh. Because I guess I'm, you know, listening to you talk, apparently I'm skating on the edge and getting there anyway.
You are. In your own way, you're already getting there.
Yeah, and I have to say also that I drink probably two cups of coffee, but then I have afternoon tea. I have wine just about any night, and I do smoke cigarettes at the moment. And I have no problem sleeping whatsoever. So
you are very fortunate.
But these things are guidelines, but, you know, just because that's happening doesn't mean that you can't get a perfectly good night's sleep, as well as with the lucid dreaming and with the astral traveling. I seem to go into these situations and I accept them. I can't say that I am aware that I'm dreaming in what I consider the lucid dreaming side. But I know that I accept, I'm like, oh, that's different. Well, all right, that's the way it is here. And I accept it. So I guess that's where I'm kind of getting in through the cracks. And then unless something happens that I don't believe, I'm just like, that's a little weird. Then I wake up. But other than that, I accept it as my reality and I float through it. And I go through all these different places.
Mm-hmm.
So... more so now this year than ever, and I think that has something to do with the energy that's coming in to the planet right now, this new energy that we have. And I think that's why people are asking so much about sleep, because they're realizing that it's this bridge to the spirit world, and people want to get in touch with more of themselves and everything that they are. So they realize how important sleep is, and then to be able to have sleep and come in and function here in reality where you're not dragging your body and trying to keep your eyes open with toothpicks, you can bring spirit into your daily life easier. So I think it's great that people are, realizing that this is so important. It's like a PSA of getting good sleep.
It was perfect. No, you're absolutely right. I think once you sort of fix the other problems, then you can get to that level. But again, it's a journey, and it takes time to get to that point. But if you, again, you are, there are many people like yourself who can drink coffee and have wine and not have a problem. But for those who want to get to that where you are, and maybe those things that they are doing might be preventing them from doing it. So again, it's not every situation is the same for everybody. But it's for those who are looking and wondering why they can't get to sleep, whatever. Then that's when we look back and see what else is going on in their lives and their particular chemical makeup won't allow them to sleep if they do those things. And sometimes you just need to create a new pattern within your normal daily routine in order to get to the level of sleep and then, get to that blissful point where you are. And I think it's all very doable. We just have different paths to get to that point.
Yeah, and you got to get to know yourself. I mean, it's a great reason to get to know yourself, what works for you, what doesn't work for you, and only you can say what that is. And it takes some tinkering in the lab, and you're the guinea pig. You got to administer different ideas. What happens if I have less caffeine? What happens if this? And I like that time period of 8 to 12 days. I think that's pretty reasonable. Sorry, New York is chiming in here. Sirens. Amazing. Sometimes when it's too quiet, I can't sleep. Like, I need the traffic. That's my white noise, you know?
Exactly. That is your white noise. If you went to the Poconos, you wouldn't be able to fall asleep. It would
yeah,
be too
sometimes
quiet.
Yeah, silence can be so loud. I can hear my
exactly.
bodily functions, like, gurgling.
Absolutely.
I'm like, oh, my God.
What is that noise? I can't breathe. So, no, you're a city mouse, you're not a country mouse. So you live by the white noise of the city. And we have patients who do that all the time. I know I have difficulty falling asleep when I go away. Let's say I do go to the Poconos in Pennsylvania. I have a hard time sleeping. I'm so used to being, I live in the city here in Philadelphia, I'm used to the sirens and the cabs and the honkings and things like, it does just sort of become background noise after a while. It is in some weird way comforting. And sometimes without that, I do have difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep. So again,
I guess it would be helpful, right, to bring
yeah.
your noise with you, just like your favorite pillow.
Absolutely. Exactly. So I'll bring my sound machine with me. I'm using air quotes, you know, cityscape stuff. So, which would be a little odd in the country, but that's fine. It works for me. So
whatever works.
So. I think at the end of the day, and I hate saying the end of the day, but really, whatever works for you individually, I think whatever works for you, I think you should probably stick with it. But if you find something that isn't working for you, again, the 8 to 10 day trial of trying something else, I think it's a worthy investment for that short amount of time to see what happens, and then you could begin to like it and find that this is good for you.
Yeah, I have a question. We have about 15 minutes left, and I don't know if you can answer this, but the only time that I have trouble falling asleep, and I know other people feel the same way, is when I know I have to get up early and I really need a good night's sleep. I'm so worried about like getting up, even though I know I can get up. But really, it's more about I'm worried about getting to sleep. I need to sleep. Sleep right now. Why aren't you asleep? Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, besides the obvious answer of like, all right, just relax yourself. Any help, Mark? For that train? How do I get off that train?
I'm afraid you're on the train. It's just an anxiety-driven reaction that you're having. It's the one day you know you have to get up to catch that train or catch that plane or make that appointment that you work yourself up. It's almost like, you know, when you're a kid, you're going to Disney World. You're so excited you can't fall asleep because you're
right.
so excited about going to Disney World. It's the same thing for adults. So you may not be excited, so to speak, but the same drive to knowing where, you know, the same feeling, knowing I have to go somewhere, I know I'm going somewhere. It's just, it really is, yes, as you said, you need to relax yourself. You know, it's unavoidable to a certain extent. It's just, it's one of those things you sort of live with, and then over time, those kinds of things start to sort of fall into the background, and it just becomes another day. But if
yeah.
it's just one of those things, unfortunately. So
yeah, it sounds like if you're practicing already with your meditation and with shutting
right.
it down before you get into bed, actually, then those times you can apply what you've learned to those times as well. I mean, that's the only time I'm successful. And also, if I can't shut the brain off, I think of it as just a nap. Like, don't try
right.
to think about having a full night's sleep. Just think about this
right.
as like a 4-hour longest nap ever, you know?
Exactly. you're psyching yourself out of, oh my gosh, I'm not going to get enough sleep, whatever, to, yes, it's going to just be a long 4-hour nap, and be okay with that and be all right with that. But know full well that over time your body will tell you it's time to go to sleep. You know, there's never a time where you're up for 72 hours straight and just I can't imagine not falling asleep. Your body will catch up and to your mind and shut down. So your body will your mind may be racing, but your body will tell the mind, this is it, we've got to go down, and it will happen eventually. But you're right. I think, as you said, if you practice the meditative, the slowing down, the turning off the world type thing an hour before you go to bed, and the meditation throughout the day, then, yeah, it will just be another day. It'll be, this is, your body's already ready to, oh, well, it's 10:30. It's time to go to sleep, despite whatever's going on tomorrow. Your body already knows at that point, it's already trained and ready to go to sleep. So I think, as you said, putting those things into practice or whatever will then kick in, and maybe the anxiety of trying to hurry up and fall asleep will disappear after a while.
And what about people that are, their body is telling them that they want to sleep like every 3 to 5 hours, like nappers? And this is one of the things I wanted to bring up, is the idea of different people having different sleep cycles. Like some people, I guess it's, I read it was a small percentage of the population, but some people do better with 3 hour intervals. I kind of think of like Picasso's and people that are just, you know, Nikola Tesla's, just like, oh, just sleep so the body doesn't die and then go, 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 you know. But that is a brain you need to deal with, as well as people that want 4 hours or, you know. What about those people that are different than, like, you know, I'm going to lie down for 8 hours and that's it?
You sort of touched on it. So those people, they're very creative people, so they have a different mind. So for them, what works for them, the three hour sleep or long nap, whatever, and then get up and do some activity and then can lay back down for another 3 hours and get back up. You know, I sort of bring up Michael Jackson. You know, he, before he died, he would say that the songs just kept pouring out of him, and he would stay up all night to write songs or create music or whatever, and he just couldn't sleep. And to the point where he actually had to be medicated, propofol, which was something used in the OR, to help him fall asleep. He just had one of those minds that just was so active, he just couldn't relax. I wish I met him and knew him before all that, but there are people like him, like Picasso, who can quote, get away with 2 or 3 hours for the sleep and then be okay. And that's part of their genetic makeup. You know, they have a predisposition where they don't need the 8 to 9 hours of sleep. They can function just fine and be awake and alert and creative and functioning on 2 or 3 or even 4 hours of sleep at a time. And for those people, you know, God bless you. I mean, that's a wonderful thing to have. You have more production during the day, but they are pretty rare. I came in and guesstimate what the percentage is in America or even worldwide, but it's probably less than 4%, probably less than that.
That sleeps like that in the intervals. Like that, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And I think maybe for those people, just accepting, I mean, if that's working for you, but I think I'm seeing now that sleep, just like the brain, is very malleable and you can train your body to do different things. So sometimes if you're in a really creative period, to maybe adapt that kind of 3 hours, 4 hours, and kind of accepting, all right, at this moment, it seems that lying down for 9 hours is not happening. So let's see what we can do with some sort of nap cycle and going down when I really feel it. Of course, you'd have to have a flexible schedule, but, you know,
right.
Usually artists do.
Telling my boss, I need a quick power nap at 1:30 in the afternoon, may not cut it, but... I am a big advocate of napping. I think Americans should embrace the idea of actually taking regular naps during the day. I mean, siestas are siestas for a reason. Your sleep cycle, you're going up and down, and you are actually in a down cycle between 1 and 3 in the afternoon, and it's a natural time to feel sleepy. So for those who sleep normally or feel okay, whatever, but you feel a little sleepy, lethargic after lunch, it's fine. You may have had a heavy lunch, But even if you didn't, it's normal to feel sleepy at that time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you can, you have an understanding boss or people who, you know, are okay with it, I would advocate taking a nap in the afternoon. You're way more productive after a nap than trying to fight through it until 5 o'clock and when you leave. So, for those power nappers, I think it's, again, the people who can live on 3 or 4 hours and accept that, I think that's the other thing. You have to accept that this is who I am and this is how I'm going to be. And just as you said, what can I do during that time to be as productive or giving back as much as I can while I'm awake? And so it's a good thing. And again, it's a rarity, but it's for those, it can be a blessing or a gift that you shouldn't squander that.
Yeah. I mean, I love those, you know, .com or even just the young companies that are coming up. And a lot of them are built like there's recreational rooms because they realize sometimes you just have to play a game of foosball to clear your mind. And
absolutely.
And you also may need a nap. And so there's
right.
napping rooms. I mean, that's just so wonderful. And then everybody, the energy, just like as a spirit therapist, you walk in those places, you're like, wow. There's a lot of different energies, and everybody's going to, but somehow there's just a lot of it, and that's awesome.
Absolutely.
I mean, if
every corporation could have a napping room, it would really make the world a better place.
Exactly.
Again, because sleep makes the world go round, so that's how I feel. But, you know, this is the United States, and it's a go, 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 but you go to Europe, I mean, they scold you for not taking a vacation. Or taking a rest or relaxing. And I think you have your work cut out for you, Nicole. I mean, you need to, you know, you have a lot of work and a lot of people out there who need your help and guidance. So you're going to be you're a wonderful, resource for people. So.
Well, thanks, Mark. That's great. I mean, the biggest message I seem to say to everyone else and myself is just relax. I mean, however it's going, it's going. I find that acceptance of oneself and how you do things, I think it's great that the sleep center is all about, at the end of the day, we know these things, but we have to see what's going on with you personally. And I think that's a lot of what's not really right with our healthcare system right now. We're just band-aiding things and just going for symptoms and not really the cause or the whole person. So, I mean...
Treat them and treat them. You know, it's an awful, awful thing. That's another program. We can talk about that later.
Yeah. I'm so glad, Mark. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this.
Thank you.
Knowledge.
Thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
It's awesome. So how do people contact the Drexel Sleep Center?
They can call our toll-free number, 888-5-DREXEL, or they can call directly at 215-482-0899.
And do you guys have affiliates that, you know, let's say someone's living in Alabama or, Maine, do you guys, like if they call, would you have somewhere that you could refer them to that's close to them?
Well, there are resources. They can call us and they can also go to the website, which is the American Academy of Sleep Medicine's website, which is ASMNET.org. You can put in your state and look for sleep labs in your area. You want to get a sleep center that is an accredited sleep center. It's a long process, but it shows that the Academy has accredited that lab, and it meets all the standards for an accredited sleep center. So we are an accredited sleep center. But there are accredited sleep centers across the country. So I would encourage them to go there as well.
Awesome. Very good. And I just want to mention before we end that Deepak Chopra is doing this whole meditation online deal with Oprah. You can sign up for a 21-day meditation with Deepak and Oprah. The first day was today. It's free. if you just put in 21-day meditation with Deepak and Oprah, it'll come up. I think it's the Deepak Chopra Meditation Center.com. And I did it today. It's about 20 minutes. And it's so helpful with just putting your mind at ease. They give you a little mantra. You know, Oprah sets it up. Deepak knocks it down. And then you feel good for the rest of the day. So I highly recommend it.
I am definitely going to go to the website, and I will see if we can try to put that link up on our website as well. I think it's a wonderful thing. I love Deepak. I actually met him once, and he's a lovely man. And he at one of I was in New York, and he had a salon, and it was just fantastic. I got so much out of meeting him and being a part of that salon. And I'm looking forward to going on the website and signing up for the 21 day sign up for meditation. Sounds terrific.
Awesome. Yeah. And did I mention it's free? It's free. You just do it.
And it's free.
Yeah.
Even
so,
better.
Yeah, exactly. If it's free, then give me three. I heard some girls say that when I was doing a production of Tony and Tina's Wedding in Philadelphia. And she was doing this whole, like, Hoochie Mama character. And she was like, if it's free, then give me three. And I never forgot it. It's amazing how those moments just kind of stick in your head forever. Oh, my God, it's great. And by the way, Mark and I went to grade school together. And from grade school, he was always running track. He was the fastest, you know, flash lightning in the whole town. And so every time I hear his name, I think, Mark Johnson, track stars. I can't help it. 20-some-odd years later.
My hands are above my head in celebration. You can't even tell it. You can't see it, but I'm celebrating right now because that makes me, I'm number one. I love
you
it.
Are.
That's fantastic.
You always will be, Mark. It's great. The track star will teach you how to sleep. Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Awesome balance. That's right. Great. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next week on Spirit Therapy Radio. Have a great night, and good luck, and Godspeed with your sleeping and your dreaming. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Good night. There we go.